Our Father in heaven, like Levi said, it's always a day to honor you. I thank you that you give us a perfect model of a father. I'm sorry that we do not seek to understand your character and nature so that we can understand what it means to be a father and so that we can interpret what the love of a father is. I'm sorry that we curse our children on some level. All of us as fathers fail our children on some level or have been failed by our fathers on some level to understand your love towards us. To understand what a father's love really looks like. And instead of evaluating ultimate perfect love as your response to us and then evaluating everything on that basis, we tend to continue on in the way the synapses were developed and the way our thought processes were developed as a child and interpret you by them. And I'm sorry for that. Because it doesn't matter how hard we try and how much we put into it, on some level all of our children are failed and we've all been failed as children. But I thank you that it's a pretty profound scene that we spend a few years with our children, maybe 15, 20 years with our children or as children being raised by our fathers, and then we spend, you know, that's maybe a fifth of our life, and the rest of it is under the perfect love of you, is how you intended it to be as a father. And yet, we interpret you the rest of our life typically by how our fathers replicated what the love of a father looks like. That's so backwards. And I'm sorry. God, I ask that you would please give us a clear glimpse of what our objective is, of what the love of a father looks like. It doesn't matter if we have children or don't have children. Understanding the love of a father has everything to do with understanding your response towards us, misunderstanding it. And that's what we do most of the time, unfortunately, is misunderstand it. So God, I ask that you would clarify why it is that children are to obey their parents, why it is that they're to honor their mother and father, why it is that fathers are not to provoke their children to anger. What it looks like, whether we are fathers, whether we've all had a father, whether it's an absent father that's never been there, whether it's a father that's been in pursuit of God his whole life, it doesn't matter. We've all interpret you by that on some level until we reinterpret and renew our minds to understand what the true love of a father looks like. So, God, I ask you to clarify that on some level for all of us today, because I know that we all could be renewed in our thinking and our understanding. Without an understanding of you as Father and your responses to us and how they mean love and they mean security and they mean wisdom and how they mean life, we will not have a right understanding relationship with you. So teach us, Lord, for your name's sake. Amen. So the place that we're at is Ephesians 6:1. Whoever, sometimes I think the guys, actually they're not quite as bad. The guy that made the chapters, I was thinking, you know, I don't know, I didn't intend to bring it up. But the guy that set the borders, the map of Idaho, you either hear about that guy riding along on his horse, and I guess he was a full-on drunken alcoholic, and that's why you look at some of the the border of Idaho, and it goes it's all over the place. He was out riding, surveying it, came up with some. There's some mountain range top stuff, but there's some that there's some that moves a little bit. You know, some's natural geography, but some doesn't. You know. But it seems to me like I'm sure the guy wasn't a drunken idiot that made the chapters. On the other hand, but sometimes he wasn't. Yeah, he wasn't a horse. So that chapter 6 is the first, you know, first 9 verses anyway, are certainly same as chapter 5. There's really no division, correct division there. And again, the precedence that it begins with is be subject to one another in the fear of Christ. He's talking about what a right relationship with God looks like prior to that, what it doesn't look like as far as immorality, as far as renewing of your mind, as far as not being led by the flesh, as far as not being sensual in what we're driven by, as far as being spirit-led, and what that looks like and what that doesn't look like. And the bottom line is it looks like being subject to one another in the fear of Christ. If we don't have a correct baseline of the fact that we are all, then we don't. Especially our culture seems to be terrible at it, that God is God, and God created this world. Therefore, by nature, we are all under authority. Right? I mean, whether we recognize it, rebel against it, go against it or not. I mean, that's a big picture that we have to have, is that God is God, and God created this whole thing here, this whole earth and humankind, in order to have an intimate relationship with us. But that is not outside of a recognition of Him as God. Okay? That's the only way we can have a right relationship with Him. He doesn't want to be worshipped for something other than what He is. In fact, He's very, very specific about He does not want to be worshipped for anything other than what He is. That's called idolatry. Okay? And God hates idolatry. So we don't get to make Him up how we want Him. We don't get to determine how we want to worship Him. God is God. But He's a loving Father that longs to have an intimate relationship with Him. But we cannot understand that loving Father relationship outside of a master-slave relationship. Okay? So we've talked about that quite a bit. You don't get to go, well, He's just my dad, so I can talk to Him when I want and neglect Him when I want and treat Him like I want and be buddies with Him when I want, and we can go to Disneyland together. Isn't that what Dad's about anyway? Isn't Dad there to bless my life and make me happy? We don't get to worship God from that baseline. We don't get to have a relationship with God. We begin a relationship. We continually exist in the relationship of calling Him Lord, right? And Lord means master. And master implies slaves. Right? This is the reality of it. And when because God is God. Okay? God didn't, when He made this world, He didn't diminish in presence and who He is. He is God. And that relationship will only be right when we recognize God as God. He longs to have an intimate, personal relationship, which is one of the most wild things, concepts you could ever consider. When you consider who God is, and yet He longs to have a relationship with us, especially in our rebellion, especially how we are. But on top of that, we get to have the relationship as a slave to a master, to a slave owner. Okay? The wild thing is, and that relationship doesn't ever change, but what does change is the intimacy of that God says He adopts His sons as a father. Which is amazing that our master, who we are property of, we've been bought with a price. We've been redeemed by Him. We have done nothing to earn it. Okay? And that we are allowed to live in the intimate relationship of a father-son, as a daughter-son, as a daughter-father. Okay? And God gives us the rights of sonship. Not get to all of a sudden move out of the slave relationship and not clean our room when He tells us to, you know, and act like a disobedient, disrespectful son. Okay, we can obey Him when we want. We cannot. If we can get away with deceiving Him, that's all right because he's his dad. I mean, we do not get to treat him like most of us have grown up treating our own fathers, and on some level been treated by ours. So the concept of father is critical. I mean, Jesus said, how do you pray? When they asked Jesus, how do you pray? How do we pray? He said, I'll teach you how to pray. And how did he say? So he taught us that our being should address our Father in heaven. How holy is your name? How set apart are you? How distinct are you from any other being? But it's our Father in heaven. Your kingdom come and your will be done on earth just like it is in heaven. How is his will done in heaven? Absolutely. Okay. Not without, you know, it's not, well, up there partying and God, we'll come over to your house later and worship you a little bit. Or what does it say, heaven? In fact, we have, myself included, I keep wondering, really, we're going to spend eternity bowing down and worshiping God? That's going to be cool. I mean, what about hunting T-Rexes on some other planet or something? I mean, there should be something, some kind of a really wild cosmic ride you could come up with. I mean, you know, like getting a full berm shot off of Mars or something. I mean, I don't know how it, you know, but hey, that's because we're pathetic in our understanding of God. And I do realize that when I am, get a glimpse of it, when I'm in a somewhat euphoric state of worship, when I am truly from my innermost being content and happy and joyous, not giggling on the outside because life's good, but there's moments when I glimpse euphoric worship where I truly am happy, and the truth is, what else matters? And that's really what we're looking for. I mean, the reason that I want to hunt T-Rex is for the excitement of it, you know. I mean, just cool. But what am I really looking for? Killing a dinosaur? Who cares? You know, that's not really it. Any more than killing a deer or killing an elk or something. It's for the experience of it, of being out there. That relationship with our Father, but again, it's epitomized by your kingdom come and your will be done on earth just like it is in heaven. So that's what Jesus said to pray for. That's how Jesus said to address our Father. That's absolute. That's master slave. That's calling him Lord. Okay? And we need to have that as our baseline of understanding of who he is as a Father. Let me read the first five verses, because they're the foundation. I'll say this. Our country, and in spite of how we think of it, seems pretty good. And if we could just get our economics okay and our foreclosures down and Obama out of presidency or whatever might be your view, that happens to be mine, but whatever your view is, that we will somehow be happy again and things will be going well. This country's a mess. This country is doesn't matter who is in the presidency, this country is rapidly declining. Swirling like this as if going down a toilet. And that's because of moral decay and rejection of God. And you know, is there potential for turning it around and coming to a place? Look at the founding of this country. I was reading something, actually this morning, I was reading, when the first opposition to English tyranny came in Boston, and the boys took the hill, and there was 1,200 of them or so, and spent the night fortifying themselves, and then the English army, General Gage put his best troops against them to go rout this revolution that was beginning. And it was amazing when you read the prayer of the general. You know, I mean, it was completely different perspective. God, that you would rout the evil from this place and the sin from this place, that we would be a holy people and a holy nation and a holy city. And that was the heart of the people. That we would not be under tyrannical oppression that caused us to worship you in a manner that was not right and not according to the Bible. This isn't part of his prayer, but that's how they felt. Because the Church of England had become pretty pathetic. In fact, worse than pathetic evil. Okay. So that was the heart of the men. And that's what they went after. And you read some of the afterwards letters written by men in that battle and say, God delivered us. God delivered us. And that was truly a generally speaking, a nation that wanted to honor God. Okay. In doing it. We're not that nation. We're not that nation now. That doesn't mean we shouldn't fight for that return, because I think we should until our dying breath. I think that we should. Okay? I think we should return to that. God established this. I hope God has not rejected this institution that He set up of the United States of America, one nation under God. I hope that He has not. Until I've been told differently, I believe that we need to fight positively for it. But Satan didn't have to bring another tyrannical king and the English army against us. All he had to do is ruin our view of a father. Because I think that one of the most destructive things in this culture right now is bad views of fathers, wrong views of fathers, wrong understandings of fathers. And it's having a devastating effect. Okay? And it doesn't matter if you're a father now. If you're married, if you're unmarried, if you have children, if you don't have children, it doesn't matter. We're all affected by that wrong view. I mean, it's a profound thing that a child is under the influence and supposed to be under the authority of his father for 12, 15 years. Okay? Your daughter, it goes on further. And after that, their relationship with God becomes a primary understanding of what a father looks like. Okay? And their primary point of authority. And yet, the rest of their 80 years or the rest of their whatever years is influenced by their view of their father. Their relationship with God is influenced by their view of their father. This is Father's Day, and I want to exhort us as fathers to be about what we're to be. And beyond that, I want to encourage all of you women too, particularly to understand your relationship with your father. Because your relationship with your father, unless directly confronted, okay, and aggressively directly confronted, because it's necessary for all of us, your relationship, your view of God will be reflected in the view of your, by the view of your father. Okay? Whether it's all negative in your view of your father, whether it's all positive in your view of your father, God's fatherhood will be diminished by your view of a father unless you aggressively go after that and learn it, okay? Period. Okay. I tried to be a good father. I failed miserably at times. I was selfish. I lived the first part of our marriage real selfishly, and had a disastrous effect on my children. Struggled and tried to. I still failed my kids. I don't sit up here and say, well, be a dad like me. I say, be a dad like God calls us to be. Okay? Be a dad like God calls us to be. I do not want my sons to follow in my footsteps. Okay? I mean, I want them to follow in God's footsteps. And the footsteps that I followed that were according to God's word and God's truth and God's image of a father, I want them to follow. Okay? But those who don't, I do not want them to follow that path. I don't want them to accept the bad with the good. Alright? I want them to look at it from God's view, and what is a father's purpose? What is a father's heart? What is a father's heart to be? First one, children, obey your parents in the Lord. You say, well, this is about children. It's not about fathers. No, it's everything about fathers. Obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with the promise, that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. Okay? This is a commandment to children, just like it was a commandment to husbands to love your wives, just like it was a commandment to wives to submit to your husbands. Okay? We're all under authority. Okay? And at this point, God is breaking that down and saying, This isn't just a mass thing where you're just under the oppression of a tyrannical whatever, dictator, leader, or whatever, okay? He says that I have put means, we're all under authority, and I have put a system and an order in place in order to protect you, in order to teach you, in order to best help you be under the authority of God. All right? And this is the order. Husbands, wives, now children. So, children's responsibility, children's obligation, children's commandment from God is to be obedient to their parents. In Colossians it says, in all things. Okay? In all things. Okay? That's a pretty radical statement because we tend to want to call it, well, we don't have to be completely, just like wives, we tend to run this gauntlet of, well, but if it isn't from God, He's my really authority. So if it doesn't seem like it's really from Him, then I don't really have to be subject to Him because, you know, I'm only really ultimately authority under God's authority and, you know, in a bunch of smoke and mirrors that really just hide a rebellious heart. Okay? And it's the same thing with children. All right? Children are supposed to be obedient. So if that is the commandment, and if that is what pleases God in their relationship, I'm up for hearing from it. Or hearing differently. But it appears to me in Scripture that a child's relationship, right relationship with God, is based on his obedience to his parents. I'm up for somebody showing me something different, but I haven't seen it yet. Okay? A child's relationship with God is based on his obedience to his parents. We think a child's relationship with God is based on getting them to say a prayer and go to Sunday school. That's our culture. That will not make a right relationship with God in and of itself. Right relationship with God, he says, that it may be well when you may live long in the earth. Honor your father and mother. This is one of the ten, the big ten, okay, commandments. Major deal. Not minor, major deal. Honor your mother and father. Children, obey. Honor your mother and father means children, obey your parents in all things. Okay? For this is right. For this pleases God. Alright? Does sin ever please God? Never. Okay? What pleases God? Holiness, obedience, submission. Okay? That's because we're honoring Him for who He is. What does God say? Does God say, children, honor God for who He is? It doesn't say that. It says, children, obey your parents. Okay? And that's a really, what is that onus on? Dad, mom. Okay? So his right relationship with God is based on his relationship with you. Until he comes to a point of accountability. Now I am up for hearing different than that in the Word. I just haven't seen it or read it anywhere. The only thing that God talks about, he says, there's some statements about Jesus says, unless you come as one of these children, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven, okay? And we go, oh, so I can just be a kind of a dumb little Christian boy, and then I'll have a right relationship with God. If you're a man, you're sinning. You're never supposed to be a dumb little Christian boy if you're a man. Okay? So and the truth is that what did God mean? You have to look at it in context. Do not the children from coming to me. And we have this picture because maybe we're raised in Sunday school or whatever, that there was this children flocking, oh Jesus, I want to see you. Really? He wasn't Santa Claus. He wasn't handing out presents. This is a very powerful social person, a rabbi. Did they run up to rabbis and say, oh, rabbi, rabbi? No, this is a person who was honored, who was put in a position of honor. I mean, this would be no different than if the President of the United States came to town and you said, Bridger, walk up to Mr. Obama and you go there and you stand and let him put his hands on you and bless you. And be quiet. And don't fuss. And don't wiggle. You telling your boys, whatever. You know, we all know as parents, all of a sudden we go, oh, we got to blow a fallacy in that. These kids were being obedient to their fathers. It is not the natural thing. I mean, a kid might want to go get attention and be a... Jesus is not talking about a rebellious little self-absorbed child. Okay? He was talking about a child who was submissive to their father to go let Jesus bless him. Okay? And what did he say? Unless we're like those. Unless we're submissive to our father. That's what he's talking about. Unless simply, basically, submissive to our father. You didn't have no part in the kingdom of heaven. Not why. Not why do you want me to do that, Dad? Dad, I don't want to. Dad, I don't feel like it. I don't want to do that, Dad. Was Jesus saying, if you're like one of those, you have no part in the kingdom of heaven? No, he wasn't. Jesus was saying, unless you're with the simple submissiveness of obedience. Okay? You are my dad and I will do what you say. And that is our right relationship with God. Period. And fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Slaves, well, we don't need to go there right now. That's part of it too. But let's just look at the first four verses, okay? Because we're going to run later singing long. That was good. So, I really want to, and I don't know that I can do this sound enough. Because it's fundamentally so, so important. Because we have such a mess of understanding between divorce, between bad generation. I don't know that there was too many things that were more destructive than the 60s on parenting. They were terrible. You know, my parents tried, but the permissiveness that was just to be accepted if you were cool or you weren't cool. You know, all of a sudden being cool or not cool was huge. I'm doing it. I mean, it was a wreck. It was, we rejected, we threw the baby out with the bathwater, understandably. My generation said, you know, parents, say you go to church, you say you love God, but you're full of baloney. You know, I mean, you don't look like godly people, submissive and obedient. I mean, you look like religious people, but you're pissed off and fight all the way to church and then you get there and walk in with a big smile on your face. And this duality of what you look like on Sunday morning versus what you look like the rest of the week, baloney. I don't buy it. It's hypocrisy and I don't want it. And they looked around the church. I don't blame them. They looked around the church and they go, this looks impotent. Because it was. They said, we're the power of God over sin? This is impotent. And besides that, nobody's really addressing sin. You know? Here I am, a little kid growing up in this, and I'm beginning, as a young teenage boy or young teenage girl, I'm beginning to really struggle with sin and not know what to do, and it seems pretty impotent. What am I supposed to do? Just pretend like you're not, okay? Come in on Sunday morning and smile. Put on a face. Look good. Don't say certain words out loud because that'll get you judged on the deal, you know? Don't act certain ways. But as far as dealing with the inner man, dealing with inner sin, it wasn't happening. And I'm stereotyping, but I'm pretty confident I'd put money on the predominant percentage of churches, okay? Not all. God's always had his remnant. So they threw the baby out with the bathwater. Well, now you're in big trouble, because now all of a sudden my generation's parents, okay? And they're going, what do we base our parenting on? What do I determine is right? Children, be obedient. Obey your parents. Okay, if this is fundamentally the way a child has a right relationship with God, then that means he has to obey me. That means that I have to come up with a system of right and wrong to determine if he is obeying or if he isn't, or what he should obey and what he shouldn't, what he shouldn't do, what he should do. Okay, what the heart of the child is. And all of a sudden we had a generation that had no basis for that. Okay, it became relativism. It became situational ethics. What? Hippies. Yeah, whatever. Hippies, we were. It's cool. You know, if it feels good, do it. And very seldom would a parent really say that to his... But that's the way they live. That's what they model to their children. So therefore, that's what their children hear, whether they say it directly or not. Okay? Selfishness, it's about me, there are no absolutes, there is no God. And what a radical concept. All of a sudden, there is no God who sees your every move, who sees your heart, who knows your heart, and you live by the heart. We were talking about this yesterday coming down from the mountains. And I think that it's a very, very important thing, talking about how do you raise up a child, and where is the balance, you know? How do you love a child? How do you teach a child? How do you teach a child in one of the most profound things? How do you teach a child not to be a hypocrite? How do you teach a child to live openly, to live truly from his heart, to not cover up, to not have a duality in himself of how he pleases people versus how his heart truly is? How do you teach that to a child? You know, the truth is, the way you do that is by exemplifying the nature and character of God, of knowing intimately the heart of your child, of being willing to deal with the heart of your child. That's a difficult thing. We talked on the way home about, well, is that going fishing with them and spending time? Is that truck time? You know, I'm a big fan of truck time, but the truth is, truck time will not produce godliness in and of itself. I am absolutely confident that you can spend all the time in the world and do everything with your child and give your life to your child, and that if you do not correct a sinful nature, you will fail. You will fail, and you will fail to love your child, and you will teach it. Let me just say this, the most disastrous effect that will have, okay, besides a child who is selfish, sinful, probably hypocritical, because he doesn't get to go fishing with dad unless he outwardly pleases dad. So now he's going to learn to outwardly please his dad, but there's never a correction of his heart and what he's doing. So you teach the child hypocrisy if you're not correcting his heart, okay? But the most disastrous effect that it has is that we falsely learn what the love of a father is. We have the impression on some level that the love of a father is him trying to build our self-esteem, trying to say nice things to us, trying to take us to Disneyland, trying to create a friendship with us. Okay? So when all of a sudden God says the love of a father is expressed in the discipline of a father. Okay? So all of a sudden when God the Father, who loves us truly, who loves us absolutely, who loves us perfectly, okay, is displaying perfect love, disciplines us, how do we take it? Do we take that submissively as the love of a father towards us, trying to teach us? Or do we rebel against it? Because fathers don't do that. Fathers are nice. Fathers, you know, and especially, I mean, we've passive fathers. I mean, now we've taken on a whole nother role in a couple generations. I mean, now we've taken on a predominant role of passive fathers in the vast majority of our culture. So what's a passive father do? A passive father is selfish. So what's a passive father's goal? He wants you to like him. Okay? He wants you to like him. He wants you to be your friend. He wants to think he's a nice guy. Mom's kind of, I know. Mom's kind of like that. But dad's, he's a nice guy. He's the teddy bear. He's the one I can go to and sit on his lap and go, Daddy. And I can have him wrapped around my finger, do what I want to get what I want to do. I know, I meant that backwards. So, the tragic thing is that completely misrepresents the love of a father, and yet we inherently cannot without, it will connect the synapses on what the father, love of a father looks like. Okay? So now all of a sudden our being says the love of a father looks like this. This isn't necessarily, has nothing to do with conscious behavior. Okay? Be clear on this. Train up a child in the way he will go, Proverbs 22:6, okay? And when he is old, he will not depart from it. Alright? That means if you wrongly train up a child, he will not depart from it. If you rightly train up a child, he will not depart from it. That initial training is forms a child's being. I mean, those who have kids or thought about kids or doing it, when you start reading about children in the development of the child's mind in the first few years of their life, okay? The first few years of their life, it will scare you. It will scare your laziness to watch TV and let your child sit there and be daycared by it. Okay? Because that child's mind, the predominance of the way that child's mind functions and works, the way that the information is transferred and passed through, those links are developed in the first couple years of his life. Alright? Really, really important time. The first few years of a child's life. You say, well, let them get older. And most parents go, they just kind of meet their needs and change their diaper and feed them food and give them toys and keep them appeased and keep them babysit. And then all of a sudden you've got this terrible twos. Or let's even go further. When the kid's 5 years old and all of a sudden he's going, you go, oh my, you know what? You're way late on the deal. You're way late on the deal. Okay? And again, a child learns that the love of a father is my daddy being nice to me. Is my daddy giving in to me? Okay? Is my daddy even taking me on trips or taking me to Disneyland or trying to develop a relationship by getting you to like me without any intimacy? Tragically, most dads, number one, don't know what their purpose is and why I'm here and what I'm trying to accomplish. Number two, most dads parent by guilt. Okay? Most dads have an element of guilt because they've not dealt with sexual purity. Their relationship with their wife isn't what it should be. They're not obedient to God and loving their wife. And so they have an element of guilt that you cannot parent correctly. There is no proper parenting that comes from guilt. Okay? So if you do not have a right relationship with God as a father, where you've confessed your sins, you've repented of your sins, you've turned away from those things. If you do not have that there is not sexual immorality, in that you are loving your wife, you're going to parent by guilt. Just by nature. And if that is true, your child's in grave danger. Because we cannot parent by guilt well. Guilt causes what? Does guilt cause you to be sensitive to other people? Or does guilt cause you to pull inward? Okay? Guilt and shame and the result of sin cause you to pull inward, to become more selfish, to become more introverted. Okay? When you're introverted and self and perspective is turned inward, can you read the hearts of your children? No, is the answer. Okay? No, is the answer. So the way to parent, the essential way to parent as a dad, is free from that, is a right relationship with God. And beyond that, the most valuable tool that you have to parent with is the supernatural intervention of the wisdom of God in knowing your child's heart. And the reality of a Holy Spirit that knows the heart of your child and can reveal that heart to you. As you cry out in dependency for Him, God, help me understand the heart of my child. Your 1-year-old child, your 2-year-old child, your 5-year-old child, your whatever-year-old child. Okay? That God supernaturally, why? Because God really, really, really cares about the relationship of a father and his children. About a mother and his children too. God really cares about that because God understands He put that in place in order to establish a foundation for them to have a relationship with Him. And He understands if it's a mess, that kid's in trouble. And that's going to be a really tough reorientation. All of us, if we're raised in a godly, right home, a biblically sound home, where we are standing on the truths of God, where dad's obedient to God, we all have to reorient and redo some synapses in our relationship with God. When that's a tangled mess that tends to produce the wrong relationships, we're really in trouble. Okay? Can it be done? Absolutely. But the process is huge. What did God desire? God desires the predominance of those maps and the way you think. When a father spanks you. Pleasant? If it's pleasant, you didn't accomplish discipline. Okay? You didn't accomplish correction. Not pleasant. Absolutely not pleasant. painful, essentially. Painful. Okay? You like it? Any child that likes to get spanked is, they're lying. Something's really wrong. All right? There's nothing you like about it. And yet, do those synapses connect that this is the love of my Father? This is the love of my Father towards me. Okay? As a father, if it does, now when God corrects us, because let's talk about God's parenting just for a minute. We read this the other day. But it's critical. We're at Thursday night. But it's critical, critical, that our view of a father's response to us be that what the Bible says. Okay? So here's what he says. This is a father towards his sons and daughters. All right? Hebrews 12. Okay? Very, very important for us to understand this. Because children, obey your parents. Okay? That is a commandment they have. Are they going to do that on their own? No. Well, wait a minute. If they really like us a lot, then they'll want to please us. If I create the right environment, they'll blossom into a little flower. That experiment failed in the 60s. It still is failing. We're still trying to accomplish it. If I never say no, if you never do negative, you just give positive reinforcement, they'll blossom into beautiful, they'll blossom into selfish little brat. Okay? Period. Self-absorbed little brat. They might have good social manners and capable of existing in a social culture because they're full of baloney and they smile when they don't mean it and they can act in ways that get along. But that's not what we're trying. Our objective as a father is not to create good little social citizens. Okay? That is not our objective. That is not what we're trying to accomplish. Okay? It might be the end result. But probably the purpose, if that's your objective, trying to create good little social citizens that get along and things, that's a curse. That's a tragic thing. That is not training up a child in the way he should go. Okay? It's training up wrong, that how he learns to not display his selfishness. Okay? Maybe he learns to socially maintain his selfishness and even have it look pretty. But that is a curse that you've done for the rest of his life, to think that the world revolves around me. So, what does the love of a father look like? Okay? Because remember, God inspired men to write this. This is the heart of God, inspired by God. And we are reading what he inspired them to do, to say. Okay? This is not David. This is God saying, this is the heart of a father. This is what true love looks like. Alright? You have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin. He's addressing his sons who have committed sins. Because again, let me just say this is a concept for you. The love of a father is more clearly reflected in dealing with the sin nature of a child than it is with Disneyland. Okay? Than it is in giving them things. Does a father give good gifts to his children? Absolutely. Okay? But God says, and why is that? Okay? Because what is sin? Sin is rebellion to God. Okay? What is the worldview? What is the true worldview? God is God. God is Lord. We are His subjects. Okay? So, sin, how does sin fit into that? Sin is rebellion to that. Sin is rebellion to the way things are, period. Doesn't matter that we accept them, or I don't believe it, or I don't want to, or doesn't matter. God is still God. Okay? And sin is rebellion to that order of things as they are. Whether we accept it, whether we like it, it doesn't matter. It is the order of things where God created the universe. God is God. And we are subject to Him in a right relationship, okay? Sin is being unsubject to authority over it. Okay? That's what sin is. Alright? So, the love of a father, if this is the way it is, if this is the only way to peace, to joy, to happiness, to fulfillment, to security, to contentment in a child, in a human, okay? Then to allow a child to go in a way opposite of that, is that love or hate? That's hate, by the way. That's hate. The love of a parent is to teach a child to live in the correct understanding and submission to the way things are. Okay? God is God. Alright? We teach that to our children by exemplifying that in our lives, but by teaching that as our relation, we are to exemplify God to our children as a little child. Let me just say this, the foundation for parenting, the objective of parenting, and thinking about this in the last couple of weeks, it is twofold, but it is foundationally based in teaching a child that submission to the authority over them is a place of peace and joy and security and contentment and fulfillment. Okay? Period. Unwavering subjection to the authority over them is their place. Okay? That is our goal. That is our objective as a parent, to teach our children. We also, that is love. That is loving our children. Why? Because to not teach them that is hating on our children. I'll say it that strongly, because that's what it is. To teach them that the exertion of their will, whether subtly, whether covertly, whether just inwardly, to teach outward compliance and inward rebellion is to curse your child. Okay? Because a relationship like that with a relationship with God like that will be what? Hypocrisy, it's called. It's called acting. It's called being a good actor. That's what a hypocrite is, an actor. Okay? It's feigning submission. It's displaying submission on the outside with inward rebellion. That's hating your child to teaching that as a little kid. Loving your child is teaching your child, again, that relationship. Because it's not about me being the authority and dictating his life. It's about me taking those first few years of my child's life and teaching what a right relationship with God looks like. Okay? And if we model that wrongly and teach that wrongly, our kids are in trouble. Our kids will struggle. And that's the world we live in right now. That's the culture we live in. I don't care that it says we're the big C and there's so many people that go to church and we all have Bibles. Okay? We have not properly understood what the role of a father is. And therefore we have cursed generations now. And as a generation, you guys are raised in a generation now of, we were raised in a generation, you are just perpetually, okay, exponentially degenerates. Alright? Because now you start looking at what's that look like? I mean, it's a phenomenal thing. You spank your child in this culture in store, and you're afraid to do it because you might go to jail. They might come and take your child services, if somebody complains. Talk about deception and life in the pit of hell. I mean, this is it. So, now, does any of us have any doubt that a child knows that in the store? Okay? Every child knows his parents are remiss or reluctant to discipline me in public. And therefore, I can probably get away with it. Okay? And therefore, I can probably act out in a way different than at home. We all know that behavior. And this is a culture now that promotes that, that pushes that. That's how degenerate we've gotten. Okay? Rather than all the people in the grocery store are realizing, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is older, he will not depart from it. The way he should go is submission to the authority over him. He's rebellion to the authority over him. So, I don't want to see it, but you should spank him. Okay? Instead, we don't live in that culture anymore, do we? We don't live in that culture. Disastrously, we don't live in that culture. Doesn't matter what are we called to act. How are we called to be? Hebrews 12. This is the love of a father towards his children. 4 starts. Again, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood. A little child. You have not... Okay, how does this work? Who is he speaking to? He's speaking to a little child when he says, honey, I love you. This means no. You're not supposed to do this. Okay? That's the first response when he does something. When a child does something, when a child grabs the... It doesn't matter. Grabs a glass of milk off the table and knocks it off. Okay? First. Okay? When a child throws a tantrum because he's tired or has a dirty diaper, is he sinning? No. When a child is told, this is not, and you're able to explain to him, this is not acceptable behavior, this is no. Okay? Is a child sinning? Yes. Okay? Because the child, he has to understand what he's doing. Now, is he going to be able to write a doctrinal thesis on what it means to roll over when you're changing your diaper? I doubt it. Okay? Should you be able to? At least a paper. Okay? What does it, when he rolls over, when they change your diaper, is a child sinning? No. When you can convey to a child, you need to lay still while I change your diaper. This is a really practical thing. Okay? Because if they roll in their poop and roll over on the floor and do it, and there's this plus, there's a... So what is the right thing to change a child? I can exert my will over you. So is changing diapers supposed to be a wrestling match? You know, his will over yours in fighting this? No. Okay? So this is a really good time. You have to lay still. You're not supposed to roll over while I'm doing this. When they can come to understand that, okay? And this, again, this doesn't mean articulating it with their mouth because they cannot speak at that time. All right? Then to teach them that you have to be submissive to me is essential and critical to not have a wrestling match with them. All right? Submission of your will is a good place to be. That begins to be taught from a young age. You say, well, that's love? Yes, that is love for a child. What happens when you say, do not roll over. And they roll over. Then God says, you have not yet resisted the point of shedding blood and you're striving against sin. You can quote that to your child. Okay? Because that's what God is saying. Okay? Shedding blood? That's really severe. What is the love of the child? The child has not chosen to submit his will. Because does a child come to a point of choosing to submit their will to you? Yeah, why? Because they love you so much? No. No, it doesn't have anything to do with because I love you so much. It has to do with because you are the authority. You are my father. You are my mother. Okay? Is that bad? No, that's not bad. Okay? Are we supposed to be obedient to God because we love him so much? Because I like him so much? Because I feel so good about him? Or do we submit to God because God is God? Do we surrender to God because God is God? Does our relationship with God, should it rightfully and of necessity evolve into, I long to please my master? Yes. Because I know the nature and character, the loving nature and character of a master, and I long to please him. Is that the foundation for my obedience? No. Will we get to know our God if we choose to obey him when I feel like it? We will never get to know our Father, our God our Father, okay? Just like your sin nature will control you and will hold you in bondage and you will be captive to your sin nature and to Satan as a child if you choose to obey your parents when you want to, okay? A child has to be taught you obey your parents because your parents said, because this is what God says to do. Let's go back to that baseline and foundation, because most of us as parents have no clue why we're doing what we're doing. We're just kind of going through going, oh my gosh, what am I trying to accomplish here? Well, I want him to be a good kid and not embarrass me. Okay, so I'll do this. They need to eat well, so I need to try to make them eat. No, what are we really trying to accomplish? Those things aren't really the issue. Okay. Let's be very clear about what God says What state is a child born into this world into? Yeah. Is it a blank slate that it only wants to be impressioned on with good, with positive, with love, and that they'll blossom into this flower? Or what does God say that child is born into? Sin and rebellion and bondage to it. Slavery to an evil master. Can we force that child? We think we can. We say the prayer so you don't go to hell. Okay? And we think we can force them into having a right relationship with God. You cannot. You can teach them. You can correct them. You can discipline them. You can love them. That's all under love, by the way. Okay? Coming into a right relationship with God so that they choose to serve God and not this evil master that they have no choice in. That's our goal. We will not force our kids. You're going to go to church and that'll make you good. You're going to go to Sunday school. That'll make you good. You're going to say the prayer. That'll make you good. You're going to go participate in church things. That'll make you good. No. No. You're going to understand that surrender of your will to the authority over you is the place of peace and joy and happiness and security and contentment. Then there's hope for submitting their will to God the Master and not the evil. See, our children are trapped in it, in slavery. They're trapped in bondage to sin. And it's our responsibility to teach them that there is a benevolent, loving Father Master that they can serve rather than the master that they were born in subjection to. Is that the true world view? Is that really what it looks like out there? I mean, that is truly what the truth is. Okay? And to not help our children go in that direction, would that be love or would that be self-absorbed, wanting them to like me and be nice? Hatred. Hatred. Is passivity in your child's life love or hatred? It's hatred. Is the dad that everybody likes because they're the nice guy a loving dad or a selfish dad? Selfish dad. Okay? And I can say that because this is what God says. What a loving father, how he acts. He says, now, I realize you have not yet resisted the point of shedding blood and you're striving against sin. In other words, you are still under the bondage of an evil master. You are still under the bondage of sin, and you are trapped in there. So, and you have forgotten the which is addressed to you as son. You've forgotten what needs to happen here. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. Okay? That is a correct use of words. Okay? That's obviously a fairly severe reproof. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines. Those who the Lord loves, he disciplines. And he scourges every son whom he receives. Scourges. That's a very strong word. It is for discipline. It is for discipline, not for Disneyland, that you endure. Okay? God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? Now, this was written in a different time and age. Because there's a lot of fathers who have not disciplined their sons in this culture. It is not common. In fact, it is abnormal. But, listen to this. If you are without discipline, of which we all have become partakers on some level, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. That would be without a loving father, wouldn't it be? Okay? Illegitimate children are those without a loving father. A loving father is a father who disciplines. Not is just present. Not who just lives with them. Not who just exists in the same house. Not who just takes them fishing or goes to Disneyland. Okay? A loving father is the father that disciplines. And if you do not have the discipline in your life of a father, you're illegitimate children. That is true not only of your earthly father, but that is true of your relationship with God. The concept that God is just here to make my life better and happier and bless my life and fulfill my life is no different than a Disneyland dad or a dad who is willing to spoil you. Okay? God loves you truly, and the true love of a father is comes out in disciplining. Now, does that mean that you should just be a tyrant? We have a very strong verse we just read in Ephesians 4. Do not provoke your children to anger. That's a commandment. Okay? So is this a father who's just going around beating or correcting his children all the time? No. This is a father whose children are extremely, totally secure in the love of their father. Okay? That doesn't mean because he spanks them and gives them a piece of candy. Okay? That means because they know they're absolutely secure in his love. It's poured out to him. That doesn't matter what he says. That matters how he lives. Okay? Furthermore, we had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. Shall we not much... Now, this is the perspective of a father that we need to have and we need to change. Shall we not much more rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? We should welcome the discipline of the Father who disciplines our inner man, who disciplines our heart. For they disciplined us for a short time, it seemed best for them. But He disciplines us for our good, that we may share in His holiness. Because without holiness, we don't have a right relationship with God. Be clear. God says, do not think. If you're a participant in sin, if you are living your life in sin, you do not have a relationship with Him. God is very clear about that. We have a relationship with God in holiness. Okay? We do not get to flip Him off and act the way we want and have a right relationship with Him. Period. Okay? All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet to those who have been trained by it, okay? Those who have been trained for it. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from that. You teach your child that the love of a father comes out in the discipline, in the severe discipline, okay, of a father. When he is old, he will not run from the discipline of the Lord on his life. He will not run from God disciplining and spanking him. Because we are all too quick to do that. Too quick to run from the disciplining hand of a father, from God. Okay? Wait, this isn't good. I don't like this. This is a situation I don't want to be in. I'm leaving. I'm out of here. Okay? And it is no different. You know what it looks like? It looks like that little kid who's running away from his parent when his mom's going to spank him on the butt. Okay? Same thing. If I can avoid this, if I can run from this, or probably the most obvious avoidance is what? Screaming bloody murder. Like you're killing him when you even begin to go towards discipline, right? Throwing a fit to the point where you think, oh, I've traumatized my kid enough. I guess this is enough. Okay? Child learned that behavior so fast, it's not funny. At a young age, they learn that if I cry hard, it hurts less. So, we immediately are able to start screaming and crying because it's going to hurt less then. Yet those who have been trained by it, afterwards, it yields what? It yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. Therefore, strengthen the hands that are weak and the knees that are feeble and make straight paths for your feet. This is talking about somebody who has been under the discipline of a loving father. How are you going to react to that? How are you going to react to the discipline of God? Okay? Are you going to not make straight paths? Are you so that the limb which is lame may not be put out of joint? Are you going to allow this discipline of God to cause rebellion, to cause running from Him, to cause anger, to cause resentment? Are you going to resist and run from the discipline of God? And therefore, that effect of discipline on your life, in this case, he's being very specific, that limb which is lame. Why is it lame? Remember he says he scourges those he loves? That's severe discipline. Okay? That limb which is lame, what are you going to do? You're going to allow it to be put out of joint and cripple you because of your unwilling? Or are you going to make straight paths to be obedient to your Father that you may be healed? Okay? It doesn't say may be made stronger, because I don't think, I mean, exercise makes stronger. Scourging does not make stronger. But are you going to heal from it? Or are you going to run from it? Are you going to understand this is the love of a father? Or are you going to run from it? Now, are you guys struggling here? Thinking, David, what are you stinking talking about? You know? This is counter to our culture. Severely counter to our culture. And again, our understanding needs to be that what is my objective as a parent? To teach my child that submission to God the Master, submission of His will, is a place of peaceful fruit of righteousness, is a place of peace, of joy, of security. Because it would be hateful to say, it's okay that you can exert your own will, live by your own will, and not be obedient, and remain under Satan's dominion and the rule and bondage of sin and the flesh in your life. That's hatred. That's breeding and producing absolute, unquestionable destruction in the child's life for eternity. Not just for right now, not just for his life, but for eternity. Where loving a child is to teach him that when he submits his will to his father. So children obey your parents. What is our objective? What am I trying to do? What things am I putting there? Let me say, a parent who is, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that, is a bad parent. Okay? Is a parent that is just frustrated and has no idea what he's doing. You should never say something to your child of don't do this without absolute awareness that when they choose to not do that or to do that, which I go opposite of what I told them to do, I have to respond. To allow for me to say don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, and have them do it is to teach them terrible things in their lives. God isn't true. God doesn't mean what He says. My parents don't know what they're doing. Nobody watches. I can live hypocritically if I sneak away. If I do three things, they're only going to catch one, so I can get away with the other two that I want to do. You disastrous effect. What's that mean? That means that when you're talking to children, be obedient to your parents. The rules and things that you set up are to be very well thought out. Okay? You're not to tell a child not to do something and not follow through. To be negligent and you know, I mean, it's the natural response of a mother chasing her child around all day. Okay? To say, don't do this and become preoccupied with something else. Or a father. Okay? And the child looks and goes, as the father's attention goes somewhere else, begins to not pay attention, going, no, I guess it really doesn't mean that. Okay? Because what are we trying to do? What are we trying to achieve? Are we trying to get them to quit being brats and buggers? Are we trying to get them not to eat cookies because they won't eat their dinner? Are we trying to get them to play nice because this fury of boys running around being crazy is driving me nuts? Okay? Is that what I'm trying to accomplish? Okay? Or am I trying to accomplish learning that their submission of the will to their father is a place of peace and joy and security and contentment? Because this is training up a child in the way he should go, so that when he is old, he will not depart from that. He will recognize the discipline of the Father on his life, the discipline of God in our life. We will recognize that as the love of a father. Okay? Instead of rebelling against it. quit. That's a baseline. Why do we do what we do? Okay. I'm a firm believer. I'm a firm believer when I, and I'm not saying that I'm always very good at it. It doesn't work. But when I give somebody a job as a boss, that I want them to understand what they're trying to accomplish. Okay. What is their purpose? Okay. What is the end result? You need to see what the end result is here. Because if you don't, if I just say, I need you to do this part, one of five steps, and do this part and do that, they're going to go like this. They don't know what their goal is. They don't have a focus on what am I trying to achieve here? Where am I trying to go always? What is my purpose, okay, in doing this? Having that purpose is fundamental to achieving that goal. And that goal of the parent is always to bring the heart, the will of that child in submission to the authority over him, because that is the only hope for him in his life. That he learns that that is good. Submission to a loving father, submission of my life to a loving father is the only way out of slavery to an evil taskmaster. And that is my purpose and my goal, is teaching it. Not to get him to quit bugging me, to go away, to be good citizens, to not make me look bad. It's what is my purpose and what is my goal? So children, obey your parents. That's contingent upon what your parents tell them to do. What you tell them to do, the order that you set down, is contingent upon what your goal is and what you're trying to achieve. So in order for that to happen, we need to understand what our goal is, what our purpose is, what we are trying to achieve as parents. And say, well, I'm not a parent, Kristen says, or Ray, I don't have kids, or whatever. That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because it's essential to understand the disciplining love of a father, okay, and what that correctly looks like so that we can interpret God's response towards us and God's actions towards us. Because otherwise, whenever things get ugly or whenever we're getting spanked, we say, this must not be from God. Okay? And we want to run. It's essential that we understand, reorient our thinking to understand that if we are not being disciplined, we are illegitimate children. We were without a loving father, and that should scare us. That should be the place of insecurity, of trouble. Let's pray. Let me end on a little different note. Okay? The objective is not to be a bad kid so we can understand the love of a father. The objective is to be a good kid so we don't have to feel the discipline of our father. Okay? The objective would be to be obedient and submissive. Okay? Because our father's discipline is, we as fathers, do we discipline our child for good behavior? Do we discipline our child for obedience? Better not. Okay? But and part of the problem is we don't recognize sin in our own lives and the need for discipline. But God disciplines us because we need it as loving child, as loving children, as a loving father towards his children that he loves. So our objective is not to be bad so we can get disciplined and God can show us his love. I mean, of course, that seems like a stupid thing to say. The objective is to be obedient children towards our father, so that God doesn't have to discipline us. But the difference is, we act towards God like we learn to act towards our children. If we can get away with them thinking we're good, even when we're not, that's good enough. If I can get away with acting like I'm submissive to God, even though I'm truly not, that's good enough. But be very clear about something. God always disciplines for the heart. Always disciplining for the heart. Not for your outward actions. For your heart. And as parents, that is such an incredibly important thing to teach your children. You don't teach it, you don't discipline them because they were a bad kid on the outside and did something wrong. You discipline them because the heart was wrong. and why they acted. God, I know that your goal is holiness. Just like our goal, holiness is the only way we get to holiness is obedience. Is surrender. If we fulfill what you've called us to, we'll be holy. If we fulfill and are obedient to your commandments, we'll be holy men and women. And that's your goal. So that we can have that relationship with you because you are a holy God. And holiness and rebellion do not mix. Just like our relationship with our children is not good when they're being rebellious. God, please, please, please redo the synapses in our hearts. The first synapses is for us all to be willing for you to redo them. Redo our thinking. Redo our understanding of what is right and what is wrong. God, please redo our understanding of a father. All of us. My kids, all kids. All of us. Our understanding of what a loving father and his actions towards his kids is. This isn't a brutal, tyrannical, mean dad who's always spanking and always correcting. This is a loving father who hugs his children and kisses his children and spends time with his children and pours his life out to his children and is willing to do whatever necessary to help them become free from the evil, sin, and wretched taskmaster that they serve and they're born under. Because that's love. And we've got a very short time to get her done. A very short time to get it done. And our kids will live with the result of that, most of them, for the rest of their lives. And not most kids in this culture are not renewed in that. Cause us all to consider our view of a father, what you look like. Cause us to rid ourselves of any semblance of Santa Claus. That's not a loving father. Cause us to, God, I on top of that though, I think the greatest thing is we all need to heal from the fleshly effects of our fathers towards us. All of our fathers have acted in the flesh, myself included, towards our children. And that the ramifications of that are disastrous and long term. And that's probably that's an essential healing that has to happen. If that is not you, you've never acted selfishly towards us. Never. Never will. You've never acted in any way that wasn't for our good. So God, I ask you to heal us all. To heal us all. That we cannot be all of us, limbs that are lame. Because we haven't run straight paths. Because we haven't submitted to the discipline of loving fathers. God, I ask that you would heal those limbs, that we wouldn't be crippled and continue to perpetuate crippling behavior to our children and to those around us and in our relationship with you. Thank you that we can celebrate fatherhood and take it seriously and soberly because you're a perfect father. And we can be underneath. There's not a card out there that truly represents who you are. Thank you for adopting us as your children. Jesus, thank you for giving us that privilege and that honor of living in a relationship with God the Father. cause us all to reevaluate what our purpose as children of you are. What our purpose is as us parents towards our children. Cause us to look into our spouses' lives and realize the devastating effects that ungodly parenting has produced in them. Causes as husbands to wash our wives in the water of the Word, to renew their minds about what it really supposed to look like, so that they are not full of wrinkles and spots and blemishes and scars and hurts and limping. But they are renewed in the loving relationship with the loving Father. I thank you for giving us the privilege of doing that, that we can celebrate Father's Day because we have a Father like you.